Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 718. In your Facebook, subtitled Virtual Panopticon? This program is being recorded on July 4th of the year 2010. Well, happy Independence Day to all of you. That's obviously when this is being recorded. It is interesting to contemplate the traditions of liberty, as mutilated as they have become in this country, and what it was that was going through at least some people's minds at the inception of the Republic, and to contemplate what has happened in terms of the development of technology. I think that Albert Einstein's observation with regard to the development of atomic weapons, that, quote, everything has changed but our way of thinking, unquote, applies to a lot of other technological developments as well. As I'm speaking on Independence Day of 2010, it is remarkable to contemplate a major technological development, which is seen, I think, or perhaps felt, would be a better word, to be intrinsically liberating, something that actually frees people up from the limitations of modern industrial and commercial life. And that is social networking on the internet. The most successful and best known of these types of these websites, of course, is Facebook. And again, as I'm talking on Independence Day of 2010, Facebook has been in the news quite a bit in recent weeks in connection with its privacy policy and with regard to concerns on the part of many that Facebook and other similar institutions basically expose the users of them to a tremendous amount of personal invasion in terms of compromising of privacy and personal data. In the information age, and we are certainly there, the internet age in particular, information is power. It's something of a cliche. And knowledge is strength. And because of that, anyone seeking to acquire power and knowledge, and wealth is derivative to an extent, it also produces both, is necessarily going to want to have information at their disposal. Information, of course, is also essential for the execution of political agendas and also for the execution of military agendas as well. And as such, it is not in the least little bit surprising to see the intelligence community deeply involved with the world of high tech, and not surprisingly, Facebook and other social networking sites. I personally don't see the intelligence community and specifically CIA involvement in this as all that remarkable, given the given, to coin a phrase, that any major technological development with strategic applications and implications is necessarily going to draw a lot of interest on the part of and participation on the part of intelligence services. And that is certainly the case with Facebook and with other social networking sites. And we're going to talk specifically about people associated with InQtel, a CIA venture capital fund that was established in the late 1990s with Facebook. But what is more interesting to me concerns the far right-wing viewpoints dressed up with something of a libertarian facade of not only Peter Thiel, but perhaps others associated with him in some of his overlapping business ventures. Now, Peter Andreas Thiel is a German-born venture capitalist, runs a very successful hedge fund. He is one really the main financial angel, so to speak, behind Facebook, although CEO Mark Zuckerberg, who developed the company, is the best-known name. Mr. Thiel is the most powerful individual involved with it, and as we're going to see later on, Mr. Thiel and other alumni of PayPal helped to launch an awful lot of the most successful tech firms on the scene today, including YouTube and ultimately firms like Yelp as well as Facebook. And a small network of individuals not only helped to launch these firms, but remain, to a large extent, key investor players in many of these overlapping companies. The upshot of that is that a very small group of individuals wields a tremendous amount of influence within the high-tech community. Now, a number of things to take note about Mr. Thiel. Again, the real name behind Facebook. Born in Frankfurt, Germany in 1967, father described as a chemical engineer, grew up in, lived in, and traveled all around the world, including Namibia, South Africa. He then went to Stanford, where he was noted for his conservative activism. After going to law school, he then went out first into the employ of Sullivan & Cromwell, the white shoe law firm of Wall Street, and very close to not only the Dulles brothers, but also to the Bush family as well. He also, Thiel, also went to work for Credit Suisse, another company closely associated with Underground Reich Capital Networks, and also a firm that had to do a lot of settling with regard to Holocaust suits as well. With regard to some of the references, such as those I just made, please do use the SpitfireList.com website, including many of the books that are available there, because that'll help to supplement one's understanding when I make a quick passing reference to Underground Reich Capital Networks that would appear to be either incomprehensible or perhaps insane to the uninitiated, and I can appreciate that. Use the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and Associated Materials, and I think that will clarify that situation for you considerably. Back to Peter Andreas Thiel, the driving force, really, at this point behind Facebook from an economic and networking standpoint. He also has some very close associations with a right-wing Christian named Morrow, and also with a Vanguard PAC organization, again, a very, very conservative organization. I would also note that Thiel is a devotee of the peak oil philosophy, although it has won a lot of followers in the progressive sector, and although I personally am very much opposed to petroleum, the petroleum industry, I should say. The fact of the matter is that peak oil appears to be not only a far right-wing political philosophy, but one that is inextricably linked with monopolistic business practices by the petroleum industry itself. Thiel is a devotee of peak oil. Thiel also is a devotee of things like the notion that you can basically, that the technological changes will enable people to live forever, and other quasi, I don't know what one would call them, perhaps transcendental high-tech elitism bordering on perhaps a type of almost futuristic sci-fi fascism. And as we're going to see later on, Mr. Thiel is also very close to people like Roelof Botha, the grandson of the former South African minister, foreign minister of the same name. And again, together, a very small number of individuals, at least some of them apparently superficially at least connected to Underground Reich economic networks, are really in a very large position vis-a-vis the relatively small but very influential tech sites that are coming to dominate the world of high technology and communications and even social relationships at this point in the United States. So again, on Independence Day, let's contemplate just how much independence we really have on this day. We're going to begin by taking a look at an article from the British Guardian from January 14th of 2008, an article by Tom Hodgkinson. It's called With Friends Like These, and it's about Facebook. And there is a correction here. It talks about InQtel being linked to September 11th. That actually was founded before September 11th. So with that correction in mind, let's read this particular list, examine a nice chunk of this particular article. Hodgkinson, a man after my own heart to a certain extent, does not beat around the bush. He begins his article, "I despise Facebook." This enormously successful American business describes itself as, quote, "a social utility that connects you with the people around you," unquote. But hang on. Why on God's earth would I need a computer to connect with the people around me? Why should my relationships be mediated through the imagination of a bunch of super geeks in California? What's wrong with the local pub? And does Facebook really connect people? Doesn't it rather disconnect us, since instead of doing something enjoyable such as talking and eating and dancing and drinking with my friends, I am merely sending them little ungrammatical notes and amusing photos in cyberspace while chained to my desk? A friend of mine recently told me that he had spent a Saturday night at home alone on Facebook, drinking at his desk. What a gloomy image. Far from connecting us, Facebook actually isolates us at our workstations. Not only that, but as we're going to see, and we're going to talk about a type of prison that was hypothesized by 18th century philosopher Jeremy Bentham called the Panopticon, in which the structure of the building would permit the wardens, so to speak, to observe all of the people who were incarcerated in the building at any time, individually or collectively, and yet they would have no clue that they were being so monitored. It's also interesting to contemplate the concept of Facebook. Again, I think in that last passage, there are indications that of the way that this is seen by people, namely something that frees them from the limitations and drudgery of modern life. It's almost a cliche, by connecting them with people and enriching the meaningfulness, so to speak, of their life. There was a blog in which somebody was dissing Facebook, and they put it to me, they put it on the blog this way. It says, "Some years ago, somebody suggested to me that I join Facebook. Quote, it's great. You can know what's going on with all your friends, and they can know what's going on with you. You can be in constant contact with your coworkers, boss, parents, friends, and grandparents. People you haven't seen in years will be able to easily find you. Friends can take pictures of you at parties and tag the photo with your name on it so you'll turn up in a web search. Your coworkers and employers will be able to see who your friends are and what they're up to as well. It's awesome," unquote. And the person here responded, "Is this supposed to be a good thing?" Unquote. And that, I think, really sort of addresses the paradox of Facebook and the notion that this is something which is liberating, aside from what I think it is justifiably seen by Mr. Hodgkinson's as something of a tragic image of a fellow spending an entire evening at his desk with Facebook drinking. It reminds me of the Billy Joel song basically they're enjoying a drink they call loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone. Well, I guess so. That perhaps is something to consider in connection with Facebook and just exactly how much it liberates us. Also, think about the extent to which it could become a panopticon, basically permitting people to be viewed in many ways and at many times that really would not suit them at all. Continuing with this Guardian article from January 14th of 08. Facebook appeals to a kind of vanity and self-importance in us, too. If I put up a flattering picture of myself with a list of my favorite things, I can construct an artificial representation of who I am in order to get sex or approval. "I like Facebook," said another friend. "I got a shag out of it," unquote. It also encourages a disturbing competitiveness among friendship. It seems that with friends today, quality counts for nothing and quantity is king. The more friends you have, the better you are. You are popular, in the sense much loved in American high schools. Witness the cover line on Dennis Publishing's new Facebook magazine, "How to Double Your Friends List," unquote. It seems, though, that I am very much alone in my hostility. At the time of writing, Facebook claims 59 million active users, including 7 million in the UK, Facebook's third biggest customer after the US and Canada. That's 59 million suckers, all of whom have volunteered their ID, card information, and consumer preferences to an American business they know nothing about. Right now, 2 million new people join each week. At the present rate of growth, Facebook will have more than 200 million active users by this time next year. And I would predict that if anything, its rate of growth will accelerate over the coming months. As its spokesman Chris Hughes says, quote, "It's embedded itself to an extent where it's hard to get rid of," unquote. All of the above would have been enough to make me reject Facebook forever, but there are more reasons to hate it, many more. Facebook is a well-funded project, and the people behind the funding, a group of Silicon Valley venture capitalists, have a clearly thought-out ideology that they are hoping to spread around the world. Facebook is one manifestation of this ideology. Like PayPal before it, it is a social experiment, an expression of a particular kind of neoconservative libertarianism. On Facebook, you can be free to be who you want to be as long as you don't mind being bombarded by adverts for the world's biggest brands. As with PayPal, national boundaries are a thing of the past. Although the project was initially conceived by media cover star Mark Zuckerberg, the real face behind Facebook is the 40-year-old Silicon Valley venture capitalist and futurist philosopher Peter Thiel. There are only three board members on Facebook, and they are Thiel, Zuckerberg, and a third investor called Jim Breyer from a venture capital firm called Acel Partners. More on him later. Thiel invested $500,000 in Facebook when Harvard students Zuckerberg, Chris Hughes, and Dustin Moskowitz went to meet him in San Francisco in June of 2004, soon after they had launched the site. Thiel now reportedly owns 7% of Facebook, which, at Facebook's current valuation of $15 billion, would be worth more than $1 billion. There is much debate on who exactly were the original co-founders of Facebook, but whoever they were, Zuckerberg is the only one left on the board, although Hughes and Moskowitz still work for the company. Thiel is widely regarded in Silicon Valley and in the U.S. venture capital scene as a libertarian genius. He is the co-founder and CEO of the virtual banking system PayPal, which he sold to eBay for $1.5 billion, taking $55 million for himself. He also runs a three billion pound hedge fund called Clarium Capital Management and a venture capital fund called Founders Fund. Bloomberg Markets magazine recently called him, quote, one of the most successful hedge fund managers in the country, unquote. He has made money by betting on rising oil prices and by correctly predicting that the dollar would weaken. He and his absurdly wealthy Silicon Valley mates have recently been labeled the PayPal Mafia by Fortune magazine, whose reporter also observed that Thiel has a uniformed butler and a $500,000 McLaren supercar. Thiel is also a chess master and intensely competitive. He has been known to sweep the chessmen off the table in a fury when losing, and he does not apologize for this hyper-competitiveness, saying, quote, show me a loser, show me a good loser, and I'll show you a loser. But Thiel is more than just a clever and avaricious capitalist. He is a futurist philosopher and neocon activist. A philosophy graduate from Stanford in 1998, he co-wrote a book called The Diversity Myth, which is a detailed attack on liberalism and the multiculturalist ideology that dominated Stanford. He claimed that the multiculture, unquote, led to a lessening of individual freedoms. While a student at Stanford, Thiel founded a right-wing journal still up and running called the Stanford Review, motto, Fiat Lux, or Let There Be Light, unquote. Thiel is a member of TheVanguard.org, an internet-based neoconservative pressure group that was set up to attack MoveOn.org, a liberal pressure group that works on the web. Thiel calls himself, quote, way libertarian, unquote. The Vanguard is run by one Rod D. Martin, a philosopher-capitalist whom Thiel greatly admires. On the site, Thiel says, Rod is one of our nation's leading minds in the creation of new and needed ideas for public policy. He possesses a more complete understanding of America than most executives have of their own businesses, unquote. This little taster from their website will give you an idea of their vision for the world, there, by the way, being Vanguard.org. Quote, TheVanguard.org is an online community of Americans who believe in conservative values, the free market, and limited government as the best means to bring hope and ever-increasing opportunity to everyone, especially the poorest among us, unquote. Their aim is to promote policies that will reshape America and the globe, unquote. The Vanguard describes its politics as Reaganite slash Thatcherite, unquote. The chairman's message today says, quote, today we'll teach Move On, Hillary, and the left-wing media some lessons they never imagined, unquote. So Thiel's politics are not in doubt. What about his philosophy? I listened to a podcast of an address Thiel gave about his ideas for the future. His philosophy, briefly, is this. Since the 17th century, certain enlightened thinkers have been taking the world away from the old-fashioned, nature-bound life, and here he quotes Thomas Hobbes' famous characterization of life as nasty, brutish, and short, unquote, towards a new, virtual world where we have conquered nature. Value now exists in imaginary things. Thiel says that PayPal was motivated by this belief, that you can find value not in real manufactured objects, but in the relations between human beings. PayPal was a way of moving money around the world with no restriction. Bloomberg Markets put it like this, quote, for Thiel, PayPal was all about freedom. It would enable people to skirt currency controls and move money around the globe, unquote. Well, just imagine how interrupting here. This is Dave Emery editorializing and pontificating something new. Just imagine how a malefactor, an intelligence service, an organized crime syndicate, a fascist national or supranational consortium, just imagine what how their philosophy might dovetail with this, skirting currency controls and moving money around the globe. Yeah, that'll work. Continuing with this Guardian article from January 14th of 08, Tom Hodgkinson writes, clearly Facebook is another uber-capitalist experiment. Can you make money out of friendship? Can you create communities free of national boundaries and then sell Coca-Cola to them? Facebook is profoundly uncreative. It makes nothing at all. It simply mediates in relationships that were happening anyway. Thiel's philosophical mentor is one René Girard of Stanford University, proponent of a theory of human behavior called mimetic desire. Girard reckons that people are essentially sheep-like and will copy one another without much reflection. The theory would also seem to be proved correct in the case of Thiel's virtual worlds. The desired object is irrelevant. All you need to know is that human beings will tend to move in flocks, hence financial bubbles, hence the enormous popularity of Facebook. Girard is a regular at Thiel's intellectual soirees. What you don't hear about in Thiel's philosophy, by the way, are old-fashioned, real-world concepts such as art, beauty, love, pleasure, and truth. The Internet is immensely appealing to neocons such as Thiel because it promises a certain sort of freedom in human relations and in business, freedom from pesky national laws, national boundaries, and such like. The Internet opens up a world of free trade and laissez-faire expansion. Thiel also seems to approve of offshore tax havens and claims that 40% of the world's wealth resides in places such as Vanuatu, the Cayman Islands, Monaco, and Barbados. I think it's fair to say that Thiel, like Rupert Murdoch, is against taxes. He also likes the globalization of digital culture because it makes the banking overlords hard to attack. Quote, you can't have a workers' revolution to take over a bank if the bank is in Vanuatu, he says. If life in the past was nasty, brutish, and short, then in the future, Thiel wants to make it much longer. And to this end, he has also invested in a firm that is exploring life extension technologies. He has pledged £3.5 million to a Cambridge-based gerontologist called Aubrey de Grey, who is searching for the key to immortality. Thiel is also on the board of advisors of something called the Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence. From its fantastical website, the following, quote, the Singularity is the technological creation of smarter-than-human intelligence. There are several technologies heading in this direction, artificial intelligence, direct brain-computer interfaces, genetic engineering, different technologies which, if they reached a threshold level of sophistication, would enable the creation of smarter-than-human intelligence, unquote. So, by his own admission, Thiel is trying to destroy the real world, which he also calls nature, unquote, and install a virtual world in its place, and it is in this context that we must view the rise of Facebook. Facebook is a deliberate experiment in global manipulation, and Thiel is a bright young thing in the neoconservative pantheon with a penchant for far-out techno-utopian fantasies. Not someone I personally want to help get any richer. The third board member of Facebook is Jim Breyer. He is a partner in the venture capital firm Accel Partners, who put $12.7 million into Facebook in April of 2005. On the board of such U.S. giants as Walmart and Marvel Entertainment, he is also a former chairman of the National Venture Capital Association, or NVCA. Now, these are the people who are really making things happen in America, because they invest in the new young talent, the Zuckerbergs and the like. Facebook's most recent round of funding was led by a company called Greylock Venture Capital, who put in the sum of $27.5 million. One of Greylock's senior partners is called Howard Cox, another former chairman of the NVCA, who is also on the board of InQtel. What's InQtel? Well, believe it or not, this is the venture capital wing of the CIA. The U.S. intelligence community is so excited by the possibilities of new technology and the innovations being made in the private sector that they set up their own venture capital fund. InQtel, which, quote, identifies and partners with companies developing cutting-edge technologies to help deliver these solutions to the Central Intelligence Agency and the broader U.S. intelligence community to further their missions, unquote. The U.S. Defense Department and the CIA love technology because it makes spying easier. Quote, "We need to find new ways to deter new adversaries," Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said in 2003. "We need to make the leap into the information age, which is the critical foundation of our transformation efforts." InQtel's first chairman was Gilliam Louie, who served on the board of the NVCA with Breyer. Another key figure in the InQtel team is Anita K. Jones, former Director of Defense Research and Engineering for the U.S. Department of Defense and, with Breyer, board member of BBN Technologies. When she left the U.S. Department of Defense, Senator Chuck Robb paid her the following tribute. Quote, "She brought the technology and operational military communities together to design detailed plans to sustain U.S. dominance on the battlefield into the next century," unquote. So these are some of the names behind Facebook. And again, vis-a-vis the intelligence community's involvement with this, well, that is actually, although it obviously the potential for abuse is enormous and again, fairly obvious, I view that as more or less pro forma. That is to say, the involvement of the intelligence community with something like this. That would be true in the United States, and it's certainly going to be true in other countries as well. But thinking about the basic concept of Facebook, and perhaps time permitting inside too, we're going to get into the issue of just what their privacy policy is. They don't have one. And what basically can be done by someone who is tech savvy and is in possession of some of the sorts of data that Facebook makes available. Again, Facebook has a very... Well, it's sort of viewed as happy Facebook. It has a very touchy-feely, warm, interpersonal, groovy sort of image to it. And yet, actually, when you start seeing some of the folks behind it and some of the interests behind it, one gets a very different impression indeed. Now, when I talk about things like Underground Reich Capital Network, some people may be thinking I'm ready for the funny farm. Please use the SpitfireList.com website. It's got my entire life's work up on it for download for free, and a tremendous amount of supplemental information as well, including a small mini-library of old anti-fascist books to enrich your understanding. Again, SpitfireList.com. That concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 718. In your Facebook, virtual panopticon, question mark? This is being recorded on July 4th of the year 2010. Happy Independence Day, and thanks for listening.